Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good day, everybody. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today is 25th of August. We continue listen to Master Tenjin Chosen's previous program, Meditation, Dying, and Karma. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Once again, welcome to this program of Dharma Radio. I hope you've had a great week. I also hope those of you with us last week took some time out to think about and maybe meditate on impermanence and death, and have perhaps through it have found an urgency to your practice. In the last few programs, we first talked about the preciousness of our particular human life, because that gives us such a good opportunity to practice the Dharma. We spoke about the many types of unfortunate human lives we could have been born into, such as being born without faculties or in a place of warfare and lawlessness, in which it would have been nearly impossible to come across the Dharma, never mind practice it. Then we also spoke about how this life, unfortunately, doesn't last all that long, at the best just over 100 years, and death could come at any time. So we really have to knuckle down and practice to make the best use of the opportunity we now have. Everything is changing instant by instant, and we just don't have the time to sit idly and let this life drift on by. Today we're going to talk a little about the consequences of letting our life drift, especially if we continually don't take care and create negative actions of body, speech, or mind. But first, let us set our motivation for participating in the program today. Remember that for any action, motivation is really the most important. So if we can set a really strong, positive motivation, we're ensuring the results of the action will turn out well. The best motivation is to attain enlightenment, so we can be of the best benefit for all others as well as ourselves. So please try to set such a motivation. Otherwise, at least motivate for yourself to gain a liberation as quickly as possible. Thank you. Now, after having considered the inevitability of death and its unpredictable arrival, our next topic on this path to enlightenment is some of the experiences we could have after the death process. Buddhists will have heard of and have some familiarity with the six realms, which roughly describe the kind of existences we can find ourselves in after we die. And today, we're going to visit the worst of such states, what we call the lower realms. The reason we think about and meditate on the lower realms is not to terrify us into a deep depression, but rather to encourage us to make sure that we don't create the causes to experience them. For these realms have causes, just like everything else. And those causes are our own unruly actions and their imprints on our minds. In other words, our karma. By thinking about our suffering in cyclic existence, we can develop renunciation for both that suffering and its causes, and make sure we avoid those actions of body, speech, and mind that create those causes. We can also infer the suffering of others, and so develop compassion and even the mind that wants to help all beings be free of samsara. It's like wanting to go traveling, say on holiday. Of course, we would want to go to a safe place where it's easy to find food, shelter, and friendly people, and where sightseeing is a pleasure. We don't want to go to a place where wild and vicious animals roam about, the people are cannibals, and the only shelter from the weather extremes is in a cave or beneath a tree. By knowing the dangers of Darfur, for instance, we don't plan to go anywhere near there. But also knowing how nice it is on Australia's Gold Coast, we might well think of that as a holiday destination. Similarly, if we know the dangers of going to the lower realms, we will do everything to avoid landing up there. while realizing that a human or God existence is much more pleasurable, so we can make the effort to at least return to that in the future. But even that is really not enough. Even in a human or God realm, we're not free of suffering. So getting out of samsara completely is our real holiday destination. So let's have a look at where we definitely do not want to go. In broad terms, that means the three lower realms, the worst of which is the hell realm. Of the other two, we're very familiar with the animal realm. And here we mean every living thing on earth apart from plants and humans. So mammals, birds, fish and reptiles, and insects are all part of what has been translated into English as the animal realm. Now, I'm not sure about amoeba, bacteria, and so on. Whether like plants, they are regarded more in the nature of chemical processes reacting to stimuli in the environment than living creatures with minds. I guess some of the most rudimentary may just be such processes, while others would fit into the animal realm. The third lower realm is that of the pretas, which translates into English as hungry ghost. It's a name that describes them quite well, as such beings have minds that are always searching for something or the other, mostly food and drink. But we'll talk about them a little later. Let's first look at the hell realm. In the West, with a scientific revolution and moves away from religion, we've more or less discarded the idea of hell, but it is quite an integral part of the Buddha's teachings. The main point is that a hell, from a Buddhist point of view, is not a place near the center of the earth where unruly beings are burnt forever under the jurisdiction of a creature with a forked tail, horns, and a three-pronged pitchfork. Though some of the guardians of the hell may look like that. In fact, if you ask where hell is, a Buddhist would point to your own mind. A hell realm is a projection of mind, not a place. Nor is a hell where you go because you've angered or disobeyed some god. Everywhere in samsara, we found ourselves as a result of our actions and the imprints or habitual tendencies those actions placed on our minds. It's not difficult to see the problems caused by anger and aggression in our lives, not only to those around us, but to ourselves as well. For one thing, such aggression sets up all sorts of tensions in our body that can result in painful illnesses and experiences in this life's future. Imagine then what that aggression will do when we die, and it is still as powerful as it was in life, perhaps even more so. It and some of our other projections are quite strong enough to make us undergo quite terrible experiences until the karma that created them runs out. That means they could literally last for eons. So hell is not just one horse occurrence with an established program of torture. There are many types of hellish experiences, although the texts speak of six main and a whole host of associated such experiences. For instance, someone who's caught in a burning car is said to be in an occasional hell. Or perhaps someone out climbing Mount Taranaki when the weather suddenly turns wretched. I've never climbed that particular mountain, but I understand, being given to sudden and unexpected weather swings, it holds the dubious distinction of being the one on which most deaths have occurred in New Zealand. Anyway, returning to the main hells, eight are hot and eight are said to be cold. And when we say hot, we don't mean a mere 30 or 40 degrees. Think hot more like the sun. Similarly, cold is more like that at the Boomerang Nebula, the coldest place in the universe, at minus 272 degrees centigrade. Not somewhere you need a bathing suit and suntan lotion. The hells are described a little differently by the various traditions. In this program, we will follow the Tibetan description, which I'm most familiar with. The first of the hot hells, the one with the least amount of suffering, is what is called the reviving hell. Here, in addition to the heat, the beings are extremely aggressive. They appear fully grown on a battlefield of weapons and immediately, due to their hostility and the violence of the environment, start fighting each other. They hack at each other, causing fearful wounds until they faint. then they are revived into the same situation to undergo the same experience all over again. And this lasts for hundreds of years. The next hot hell is the crushing hell. Say you've killed a flea in the past by crushing it between two fingers. This hell duplicates the action with a killer as the victim who is crushed between two mountains, maybe shaped like fingers. Then the crushed victim is revived whole again, and the process is repeated over and over for a huge length of time. The crushing instruments could be anything, like a vice or huge animal heads, perhaps like goats. In the wailing hell, beings are driven by fear of hell guardians and fiery spouts to find somewhere to shelter in. They find an iron house, but it turns out to be like a huge oven. They're locked inside, and the whole thing is encased in fire. The hell gets its name from the sounds the beings make as they burn. And the next hell, the loud wailing hell, is similar, except the oven is enclosed within another oven, and the suffering is doubled. If you can imagine being impaled alive on a flaming skewer and fried, you can imagine what it must be like to be in the hot hell. Here, beings are also boiled in a huge cauldron of water until they lose consciousness. Then they are revived, and the whole process is repeated again and again for eons. The intensely hot hell is twice as hot again, and here beings are skewered on a burning trident, wrapped in fiery metal and dipped in molten metal until the flesh falls away from the bones. The skeleton is then laid on the ground, flesh grows back again, and the process repeats itself endlessly for an unimaginable length of time. The eighth is the worst of all the hot hells. In this state, beings never die but remain indistinguishable from the fire. Like burning rocks cannot be separated from the fire that burns them. The only way to know beings exist in this fire is by the pitiful sounds they make. And the beings have to endure that until the karma is exhausted. It is said that that would be countless eons. So if you're not pretty scared of going to the hells now, I think your mind must be made of stone. Unfortunately, once we get out of one of these hot hells, we still have to experience what is known as the surrounding hells. I guess it's a bit like a concentration camp surrounded by barbed wire, but on the outside also guarded by swamps, minefields, vicious dogs, and so on. You might dig under the fence, but then still have to navigate some very dangerous obstacles before getting free. The surrounding hells include a pit of fiery embers you have to cross, burning your legs up to the knees at every step. The flesh heals when you lift your foot, but burns again with the next step. When you finally get out of the pit, you must cross a putrid swamp stinking like a dumping place for corpses and filled with lamprey-like creatures that suck your flesh until you look like a sieve. After that, you have to pass over a razor-filled path that cuts your feet to shreds before entering a forest of trees with razor-sharp leaves that slice into you as you wander through it. Then in the Shalmali Grove, you hear the cries of those you've been most attached to, crying for you from the tops of the trees. You climb up the trees, but the leaves are like swords pointing downwards and cut you as you climb. At the top of the tree are only great carnivorous birds like vultures that attack you. As you climb down again, the leaves of the trees turn upwards, shredding you until you arrive at the bottom of the tree where wolves and other animals attack you. And so it goes on. The last of the surrounding hells is described as a river of burning liquid like molten metal, which you have to cross. It has no bridge or ford, so you have to swim, as it were. But when you try to get out again, vicious beings on the bank beat you back with clubs. We have to spend thousands of years in each of these surrounding hells before moving on to the next one. Then to imagine what it must be like in the cold hells, think of being at Antarctica in the worst blizzard with no clothes on in the depths of winter. It's completely dark. The environment is just mountainous ice with no shelter anywhere. Each of the eight cold hells is progressively much colder than the one before, and as one's flesh cracks open, insect-like denizens of the hells suck away at the body fluids. These hells are named after the sounds the sufferers make and the way their flesh splits open. So we get the blistering hell, the bursting blister hell, the chattering teeth hell, the exclamation of cold hell, the moaning hell, the cracking like an upper pala flower hell, the cracking like a lotus flower hell, and the great cracking like a lotus hell. The hell realms is described the worst kinds of suffering we can experience in cyclic existence, and while we still have some time in this human life, we have a great opportunity to make effort to avoid landing up there. In normal circumstances, the time spent in a hellish experience is relatively infinitely longer than the mere 100-odd years we spend in our current type of existence. So we really do not want to let our karma dump us in such situations. The next dangerous state to avoid is the preta or hungry ghost realm. Possibly you know of someone who's extremely miserly, who finds it difficult to give anything at all, even 10 cents to a beggar. Such a mental disposition can create the karma to land up in the preta realm, where beings find it extremely difficult to find resources. Some are constantly scrounging for food and drink, but even when they find some, they're unable to eat or drink it, either because it disappears like a mirage or it changes to something inedible. Some have bodily obstacles, like very thin necks or very small mouths. If you can imagine a very malnourished person with a bulbous stomach and extremely thin limbs and a tiny mouth, you may get some idea of such pretas. It is also said that when some of them find food or drink, it burns when they consume it, similar to a malnourished person who eats too quickly and too much. Pretas are also sensitive to changes of temperature, but in reverse to the way we experience it. For instance, they experience the moon as very hot and the sun as cold. Like malnourished humans, they are extremely lacking in energy and live in constant fear from others or from guardians who chase them away from food when they find it. The causes for being born as a preta are miserliness and covetousness. If we have strong grasping for resources such as food, clothing, and so on, we create this kind of karma. In Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha was enlightened, Tibetan monks sometimes congregate and participate in big offering ceremonies in which lots of bread, biscuits, and other edibles are offered. Bodh Gaya is in Bihar, the most impoverished state in India, and it's full of beggars. I heard of some of the local beggar boys making off with some of the offerings of the Tibetans, and one highly realized monk said that the karmic result of their action would be that they would be born in very impoverished circumstances again. So this is like creating preta karma. And because they're creating the habit, they will do it again and again, and so it will be very difficult for them to find good resources and circumstances in the future. Of course, it's easy to understand why the boys took the offerings. They're so poor, they probably often go hungry. But that doesn't unfortunately prevent the karma. However, some very wealthy people also collect this kind of karma. I wonder if people like Imelda Marcos, who reputedly owned 2,500 pairs of shoes, would collect this kind of karma through excessive grasping. Now we come to the realm of the animals, but I don't think I need to say much about the suffering in this realm, as it's so obvious to most of us. Those animals we keep as pets often have quite happy lives, but most in this world live with a great deal of fear and hardship. The worst part of being an animal is its great stupidity. Now I know you could say some animals appear more intelligent than some humans, but what we mean here is that animals have no way of being able to practice the Dharma or even recognize teachings even when they attend them. our center cat, who very recently died, often joined us for Dharma activities like teachings, meditation, and pujas, but she didn't have a clue what was going on. She just came for the company. Still, she had a happy enough life, especially if you compare it to the life of a dairy cow. A cow lives just to give milk to its owner. As soon as it's no longer useful, it's sent off to the slaughterhouse. I wonder if you know how much suffering goes into a liter of milk that we so easily buy at the dairy or supermarket. When a cow gives birth to a calf, within a couple of days the calf is separated from its mother so the farmer can harvest the milk. Imagine the intense suffering of both cow and calf. Imagine a mother's distress being separated from her child after a couple of days, and the child's suffering having to leave its mother so soon. But that's not the worst of it. Especially if the calf is a bobby, it's immediately sent off to the slaughterhouse to be made into veal and meat byproducts. In New Zealand, this happens to some 1.5 million calves a year. And this is just one instance of how animals suffer through exploitation. When I was in India, I saw another. A donkey was used to draw a cart, but where the yoke crossed its back, it had worn through the donkey's flesh until the bone was exposed. The donkey driver wasn't concerned at all, so day after day, the donkey had to labor, the yoke grating against the bone, the flies laying eggs in his bloody wound. But even when humans are not involved and animals are in their natural state, their lives are difficult. Many prey on each other, some really cruelly. For instance, praying mantises catch and eat their prey alive. And imagine what it must be like to be a fly caught in a spider's web, cocooned in silk, and then slowly sucked dry. Even in normal circumstances, animals mostly suffer. Outside animals in winter have to bear whatever cold, wet weather comes along, and many live in a state of constant anxiety. Every day, we feed the birds near the road outside the center. The sparrows come in droves, but they are constantly flying from the food up into the trees when humans or other animals pass by. They're extremely jittery, constantly in fear of being attacked. Now, I'm sure you can think of many other instances of the suffering animals go through. If we could see the general way of life of all animals in the world, I think we would be appalled at the amount of suffering there is in the animal realm. So why would we wish to be born there? I've heard some people say they wouldn't mind being born as a cat or a dog, but I think they just haven't thought hard enough about what they're saying. So those are the three lower realms. The more we can think about them, the greater our determination will grow not to be born in any of them. That will lead us to take refuge in the Buddha Dharma and Sangha and practice according to the karmic law of cause and effect, trying hard to give up non-virtuous actions, especially the 10 non-virtues, and create as many virtuous actions as possible. For Westerners, it may be a little difficult to meditate on the hell and preta realms, as we have lost some of our cultural familiarity with such concepts. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that it may be more effective for some to meditate on the extreme states that we could be born into on this planet, like being born as a girl in Darfur, for instance, or in a Taliban-controlled parts of Afghanistan, or as one of the bigger children in Bihar, some of whose parents purposely maim them at a very young age so that they will elicit more sympathy from foreigners. Or being born in some warring African state and learning to kill from a very young age as a child soldier. Now we don't have very much time left, but let's do a short meditation on being born as an animal. Remember, the purpose of this meditation is not to make us miserable, but to convince us to make the best use of our remaining time in this life so that we avoid landing up in such situations. Please first of all sit comfortably with your back straight and concentrate on your breath. imagine what it must be like to be born as a wild animal or a domestic one exploited by humans, as we have discussed. Try to get a real feeling for the suffering the animal goes through. Did you get some inkling of what being like an animal must be really like? Over the next week, please think about what we've talked about today and try to make it relevant to your life and practice. Now it's time to go. Thank you for joining me today, and we'll continue next week at the same time. Until then, may the blessing of all the Buddhas be with you and all beings. Goodbye.